Are you looking to buy or sell a thoroughbred? Maybe a broodmare, tried racehorse, or even a yearling? Look no further than bloodstockauction.com, Australia's first 100% online auction. Horses go under the hammer from 7 p.m. the first and third Tuesday of every month. Catalogue available 5 days prior. Trading horses has never been easier. Log on and become a member today. Access to Bloodstock worldwide. Bloodstockauction.com, delivering the sales ring to you.
Garlo's Pies, 100% Australian lean Aussie beef and bursting with flavour in all Coles and IGA stores. If you can't find them, ask for Garlo's by name. The difference with Garlo's is the deliciously flaky pastry on top and a bottom which is rolled extra thin, giving you more meat and less fat.
Hey, Mum, don't forget the Garlo's.
And don't forget me, Darls.
You tell them, kiddo. At Garlo's Pies,
we're thin on pastry, we're big on meat.
Dynamic Syndications and Gay Waterhouse have a superb filly bred to be early and quick. Buy, exceed and excel. Champion sire with 99 stakes winners, 10 at Group 1 level, including Gay's Golden Slipper winner, Overreach, and our own Blue Diamond winner, Reward for Effort. Our filly's from Red Fever, a successful broodmare with 102 stakes horses in a family. For only $6,900 a share, become part of the Gay Waterhouse team. For info, visit the website or call 1-800-619-999. AFSL 3360808.
Tab Saddle Up Sunday. Visit our most exciting region, like the Western Racing Districts of New South Wales.
It's Canamble's turn to saddle up today. Canamble Cannonball Ladies Day will feature fashions on the field, local mini markets and a photo booth. Plus plenty of kids entertainment, including a bouncy castle, face painting and more. Sky Sports Radio and Sky Thoroughbred Central have the mounting yard covered at Canamble today.
Z&Z Jewellers has been a Hurstville institution for over a quarter of a century. For more than 20 years, they've been the source of the NRL's official watches and rings. And they've been designing and making the grand final ring with passion for the last 17 years. For official NRL watches and jewellery, engagement or wedding rings, corporate gifts or remodelling and repairs, Z&Z's your place. See Z&Z at Westfield Hurstville or visit znz.com.au. Proud sponsors of the Parramatta Eels and St. George Junior referees.
Starter has the button. Stalls are back and racing. Field sent on their way to the roar of the crowd.
Set.
They're off. On your racing and sports leader, Sky Sports Radio, it's time for Tab Talk. With the very latest in racing and sport from around the country, welcome to Tab Talk.
And good morning. It's 3 minutes after 10. Welcome to Tab Talk. I'm Simon Harrison. Coming up on the show this morning, Neil Cordy to have a look at the AFL from this weekend. It was a big match at the SCG on Friday night. And after Neil, we'll talk to Broadmeadow base trainer Mick Dwyer regarding Kaseki Dane's win yesterday at Rose Hill. Trent Langscale from tab.com.au joins me. Trent, good morning.
Good morning to you, Simon.
Now, I've got a greyhound race coming up from Addington in a couple of minutes, but before we head to New Zealand, should we run through some markets? What I'm interested to find out, Trent, is where Richmond sit now on the premiership betting for the AFL.
Well, they're up there at the moment. Now, it's still dominated by Hawthorn, Sydney and Fremantle. And you've got West Coast who are around the mark at the moment in the AFL. But Richmond, they've been maligned for a lot of years, Simon, and all of a sudden after their win on Friday night, they're now given some sort of serious chance of perhaps breaking their premiership drought since 1980. But Hawthorn, they're $2.75 favourites. You've got Fremantle and Sydney both at $4.25. West Coast at $9. Collingwood and Richmond both at $17. And North Melbourne, the next best side, at $26. So that's the premiership betting in the AFL. There's just the one match this afternoon, and we'll have a chat to Neil about it shortly. It's Carlton up against Gold Coast, and it's a 3:20 start at Etihad Stadium, where Carlton, after finally getting their second win of the season last week, they're the $1.43 favourites against Gold Coast at $2.85. But a couple of struggling teams, just the one match in round 13 of the AFL this afternoon.
Good on you, Trent. We'll get to Neil up in just a moment, but firstly, the first from Addington in New Zealand. Eight Crystal McBell to run the favourite here at $3.30.
Yep, she's having a first look over the 5:20, of course, Crystal McBell. And she's by Smooth Fancy out of Houston, which wasn't a bad little race, but I'm pretty sure it run races over the middle journey at Houston as they're about to load up here for the first. So up they come. The placemakers Ashburton Stakes over the 520. Wally Baxter, the inside. Nina Baxter. Tatum Baxter and Lynn Baxter. Private Action, Susan Jewell, Infernal Majesty and Crystal McBell. All the Baxters there, the odd numbers. 5 and 7. Boxes 1, 3, 5 and 7 for the Baxter Dogs here. Private Action, Susan Jewell, Infernal Majesty and out wider Crystal McBell. Your favourite drawn the outside. So 5:20. The placemakers Ashburton Stakes, first of the afternoon. Green light on, lure rolling. We're set here for the first. Ready. Racing and Wally Baxter step well. One of the best out is Nina Baxter going around Infernal Majesty and going up there. Wide out is Crystal McBell. Then Private Action getting through on the inside. They race for the bend out of the straight. Favourite's been shunted back a bit. Down the back they go. And clear and fun, Infernal Majesty. Round the outside, Private Action. Nina Baxter, a couple of lengths to Crystal McBell. They're followed back. We go there. Tatum back to the others out of it around the corner. Getting right away though, Infernal Majesty. Private Action running to second. But up they come. Infernal Majesty will beat second there, Private Action, Nina Baxter, Crystal McBell, Susan Jewell late. Then we go back there to Tatum Baxter, little gap there to Lynn Baxter, and the one back at the tail of the field.
Addington, a race one there. Number 6, Infernal Majesty, pays $4.70 and $1.80. 2, Private Action, $1.10, and 3, Nina Baxter, third, $4.90. You are listening to Tab Talk here on Sky Sports Radio. Well, it was one exciting match at the SCG on Friday night. Richmond now down by 32 points at half time, but managed to get up in the second half and win the match by 18 points. Neil Cordy is with us now. Good morning to you, Neil.
Morning, Kev.
Nice to have you on board, and we have Trent Langscale from tab.com.au with us as well. Well, I guess at half time, Neil, it was just a case of how much would Sydney win by?
Yeah, it was an amazing match. It was a game that literally had everything, as it turned out, with the reports to Franklin and Tippett. But they looked really like they had the Tigers well in hand, up by five goals plus at half time. And then, as John Longmire said after the game, they grabbed the momentum back. It was interesting that the two reports came shortly around halftime. Franklin just at the end of the second quarter and Tippett early in the third, and that seemed to certainly affect Franklin. He only had one touch for the rest of the game, no more goals, as Alex Rance did a fantastic shutdown job on him. And then the Tigers surged through Jack Riewoldt, and he really dominated. Their tall forward line caused some problems for the Swans defenders, and the Tigers really have stamped themselves as a really credible, potentially top four team, because you look at what they've done and gone away and beaten Fremantle and Sydney on their home turf over the last 3 weeks, which is an outstanding effort. So the Tigers are really in the hunt.
Yeah, Buddy and Alex Rance were really physical right before the start of the match, and that continued through the game, but it was Alex that got the last laugh in the end.
Yeah, he did. Alex Rance, well, he's just re-signed for another 5 years, I think, at the Tigers, and that's a massive get for them going forward. And it was, as you say, it was very physical. There's a lot of push and shove. And then it seemed to boil over a bit when Buddy went just a bit too far with his bump, which caught the Richmond midfielder high. And then I think Buddy's probably going to end up getting at least 1 week, possibly two. Tippett might be a little bit luckier, but I think Frankfurt's certainly going to see some time on the sideline, and they've got Port Adelaide coming up this weekend. This on Thursday night, so it's not far away.
And that was one of the talking points I was going to ask about, Neil, that, what your chances were, that you were thinking that whether it be Buddy or Kurt Tippett whether they both missed the match on Thursday night against Port Adelaide. So Franklin, not the first time he's done that either. He used to do that a lot with Hawthorn, just sort of, unfortunately, the size that he is going to clip a few of those smaller players from time to time.
Yeah, that's right. I remember him doing something similar to Nick Malcheski when Nick was at the Swans. He's very physical. He does put his body around and he makes a lot of tackles and he makes a lot of contact. He doesn't just, you know, hang around, mark the ball and kick goals. He gets up the ground and he does throw his weight around. He's probably, I'd say, in looking at this particular incident with Edwards, he's stepped past the ball to bump. So he's made a choice to bump rather than go for the ball, and that will mean the intent is it's intentional rather than not intending to do it. And I think that will see the fact that he got the contact in his favour, and in Tippett's favour is the fact that both the Richmond players were able to play on afterwards and play out the game. So that'll be in their favour. So the contact might be considered low, but I think the intent in Franklin's case will be the thing that goes against him, whereas Tippett, I think, might be able to get away with reckless for his spoiling punch, which saw him reported for striking.
And Neil, was there a Richmond player that was reported?
I haven't seen a Richmond player get reported, no.
No, I remember one stage of the match, it looked as though there might have been one that that went on report. But at half time, what do you think Harwick was saying to the team?
Well, it was whatever he said, it worked, because they've now won five of their last six matches and are developing, some real momentum heading into the back half of the season. And those sorts of wins, they're on the road. They've been absolutely fantastic, the Tigers. And they've moved into sixth spot on the ladder, 7-5. And they're in really good shape. Remember last year, they left it right to the very last game. They beat the Swans in round 23 and had to win, I think, their last eight games in a row to get in, and they did it, but then fell over to Port Adelaide in the finals. Now they're at 7-5. They're in the top eight pretty comfortably now. They're going to play finals football, you think, almost certainly. And if Hawthorn or the Swans or the Eagles slip up, they might be one of the teams that could snare a top four spot.
And it's amazing, Neil, after Sydney had won six in a row and they look really good up until half time, and they have a bad second half, and then you have some experts all of a sudden starting to question the Swans. We had Dermot Brereton on Melbourne radio station SEN yesterday. He was questioning whether the forward line had become a costly failure and whether they'd spent too much on the star goal kickers and it jeopardised the rest of the team. And David King also dubbed that Kurt Tippett had been an expensive disappointment. It's amazing what one half of football can do.
Yeah, it is. That's right. I'd suggest that's a bit of an overreaction. I tell you one thing I'd say about Kurt Tippett, and he is playing a different role. So I think people don't understand who don't watch the Sydney Swans play every week. He's been playing in the ruck probably 30-40% of the game, helping Mike Pike out. And last year when Mike Pike was rucking with Sam Reed as his backup, they were the second or third worst rucking combination statistically in the competition. Now that Tippett's gone in there and paired up with him, that combination, even though Pike was out for Friday night's game against Richmond, that combination with Tippett and Pike is right up there in the top three in the competition now. And given that the Swans are a big stoppage team because they tackle so much, that really does serve them well. So to put a line through Kurt Tippett, I think really doesn't understand the lay of the land. And he's managed to kick goals. He's kicked probably in the low 20s already. So he's on course to kick 40 goals. So if you get a ruckman who's kicking 40 goals a season, he's not doing a bad job.
Do you think it was just a case of Sydney taking the foot off the accelerator half-time, thinking that they'd had the game won?
Well, I think that certainly looks like what it was. And I think especially teams that are coming back after the bye, they usually see that in the first half where there's a bit of rust or just getting out of that groove of playing week in, week out, that they battle in that first game back. Richmond certainly did it last week when they, after they had the bye and came and played West Coast, they were just all over the shop, and the Eagles beat them on their home turf, the MCG, pretty comfortably. So it's an interesting one to watch. It's a bit like the, you know, when they get a day off in the Tour de France, sometimes the riders just blow up because their body has got out of that routine of playing all the time. And sometimes you can see that. Whether we'll find out pretty quickly whether that is the case with the Swans, because they have to back up on a six-day break and play Port Adelaide at the SCG. And while Port aren't travelling very well, we'll find out pretty quickly whether the Swans are gone.
Now, speaking of Buddy's old team, yesterday they were at the MCG, nil, and they defeated Essendon by 38 points. But the main talking point about that match was not the Hawks winning, but all of a sudden Sam Mitchell, who was mockingly injecting himself in the arm while addressing some of the Essendon players at three-quarter time.
Yeah. He subsequently apologised to the players and to Essendon Football Club for that gesture, and James Hurd said that he described the gesture as idiotic, and they're happy to let it slide. But it's interesting that it's taken this long for a player to on the field to do something like that. I've been frankly surprised in the heat of the battle, and given that you know, that Essendon play a pretty aggressive style of football, that somebody actually hasn't said anything, or certainly we haven't heard about any players saying anything directly and having a shot at them over the doping allegations. I think it was the heat of the battle thing. I think and Sam Mitchell is just in the time that I've known him, and we've seen the way he goes about his footy and conducts himself off the field, that he's a decent bloke, and he's apologised for it, and I think that's okay.
Yes, if there had been no contrition shown after the match yesterday, perhaps it would have gone a bit further. But, yes, James Hurd didn't appreciate what he saw from that point of view. But Hawthorn, they're getting back on track and all of a sudden looking like why they are the premiership favourites as they go for three in a row. Just a couple of the other matches from yesterday. Adelaide and the Western Bulldogs, they helped their finals chances, but in different circumstances. The Crows, they overturned a 24-point, three-quarter time deficit against the Brisbane Lions at their Gabba, while the Bulldogs withstood us and killed a fight back this time to win by 6 points at Etihad Stadium.
Yeah, they were both significant wins because had the Crows lost that one, and they looked in a bit of trouble there for a large slice of the game, that they could have potentially dropped out of the eight. We've seen the GWS Giants, who had the bye this weekend, drop out of the eighth into ninth position. And it was big for the Dogs because they were facing some demons. Remember, they came from St Kilda, who they only played about 6 or 7 weeks ago, came from 55 points down to run over the Dogs in the last quarter when they played earlier this year. So when the Saints threatened again in those last minutes of the last quarter, there were some demons coming out. But I think even though the Saints are down the list, they've been able to grab some big scalps this year, and particularly at Etihad Stadium. So that's a significant win for the Dogs. And I've had a look at their draw, and the Bulldogs from that position there could very likely hang on if they win the games they're expected to in the back half against the teams that are below them on the ladder.
And Neil, just your thoughts on the Fremantle match last Thursday. Though they won the game, but they didn't quite look at their best, did they?
No, they've had a patch right through the middle of the year where they've struggled quite a bit. We saw in the wet against the Gold Coast, they really battled. Of course, they lost at home to Richmond, and then Collingwood really took it right up to them. I think Nathan Buckley's team is now really coming into their own, and if they don't make the top four this year, I think with that young team, I think there's a lot to look forward to for the Magpies. But Fremantle have just gone off the boil a little bit, but winning, you know, they're still sitting at 11-1, and you'd think with the games at home that they've got that they can
they can comfortably hang on to that top two spot, which is where they want to be. So they'll have a home final in the first week, won't have to travel across to the east of Australia, and it'll be a daunting task for whoever finishes probably in fourth position and has to travel to Perth to take on Frio in that first round of the finals. And I think that they'll be able to right the ship. But the key thing is that apart from the Richmond game, that they have managed to find a way to win. And you felt, even though Collingwood were surging in that game, that that Frio always had them covered with their defensive intensity.
Gee, it'll be a good match in a couple of weeks when Fremantle will play Hawthorn.
Yeah, massive game. Look, you know, potentially the way it looks right now, I still see Hawthorn as the team to beat. They lost four games in the first half of the year, but if you look at the even before they got back into the top four, they were always in that top group of defenders, and their ability to score goals has always been outstanding. Fremantle have been the best team so far, but Hawthorn are really building, and we saw that again on the weekend. They've got such a source of goal kickers. I think they average over 9 different goal kickers per game, which makes it really difficult for opposition teams to defend. Paul Puopolo jumped up and grabbed 4 goals himself, and they're really difficult to contain. And what we've seen also in the last couple of final series is their defensive intensity, which they haven't generally got a lot of recognition for. But that's what really beat up the Swans in last year's grand final. And when they get to that, when they get closer to September, they can crank it up another level. And they've got a gear which, as yet, other clubs haven't been able to match yet.
All right, Neil, well, we'd better wrap it up there. Thanks very much for your time this morning. And this afternoon, we've got the Carlton Gold Coast match on. Who do you favour there?
Yeah, I think Carlton, under John Barker, is really showing some positive signs, and I think that's one that they'll be looking to win. Gold Coast have probably got Gary Ablett back, we expect, and I think that will help them, and I think it'll be a closer game than we've seen in recent weeks. But at home, I think Carlton will win this one, and they'll look forward to the back end of the year with a bit of momentum.
Always good to chat to you, Neil. Thanks very much for your time, and enjoy your afternoon.
Thanks, Kevin.
So Neil Cordy there having a chat about the AFL. Well, I'm on Freo this year. Trent, you're still sticking with the Swans?
I believe the Swans are still the team to beat there, Simon, but as a Hawthorn man, hoping they can make it 3 in a row, but just the Swans just looking to avenge that defeat in last year's grand final.
We do have an Addington Greyhound race coming up in a couple of minutes, and shortly we'll have a chat to Mick Dwyer, who had a winner yesterday at Rose Hill, with Kaseki Dome winning the significant stakes.
Z&Z Jewellers has been a Hurstville institution for over a quarter of a century. For more than 20 years, they've been the source of the NRL's official watches and rings, and they've been designing and making the grand final ring with passion for the last 17 years. For official NRL watches and jewellery, engagement or wedding rings, corporate gifts, or remodeling and repairs, Z&Z's your place. See Z&Z at Westfield Hurstville or visit znz.com.au. Proud sponsors of the Parramatta Eels and St George Junior referees.
Jack is back. If you've been missing Jack Petley's tips, you don't have to any longer. Jack's back with a full daily wrap of New Zealand thoroughbred racing, including all the hot news, daily tips and specials on his very own website. And it's free. Just Google Jack Petley's tips and you won't miss a thing.
It's time to get back to Tab Talk on your sports leader, Sky Sports Radio.
And we'll have Mick Dwyer on the line in just a moment. But prior to that, the second from Addington rate, Fireman's Galaxy, is at $3.20. Those numbers in the first were 6, 2, 3 and 8.
Quality selections, $20 spend, because we've taken 4 on the first leg. Ends up at about 18%, I think, 18%, 108 combinations. But, yeah, Fireman's Galaxy should go close to winning. It's just, as I said, just a weak question mark next to the 520 for the dog. It goes like the wind. It won its first race by 8 lengths, gave nothing else a chance. And if it can lead here again, it's going to be interesting. to see if it can see it out over the 520. But another Liz has got good early speed. It's drawn up on the inside. Home was Riley. It's also been sprinting up. So, yeah, they've got a bit of speed inside there. Kitlock Silver, as I said, might run a good race at odds here. Boston Billy in the middle. Black Sails, Plutonium, and Opawa Grunter, first up since early February or mid-February. So whatever it does today can only improve on. So just about ready. First leg of the early quali, the Bruce and Ann Dan Stakes over the 520. Green light is on. Lua Rolls was set for race two. Set, ready. And racing down on the inside, another Liz jumped out nicely. Now Fireman's Galaxy missed the kick. It's going around them now, but it's using a bit of petrol there to try and get around them. Another Liz leads. Boston Biddy going to second and goes up outside the leader. They're followed three lengths back by Plutonium, going up and around the outside of Power Grunter. They're followed by Fireman's Galaxy. He's not going to do it today. It's well back. Up ahead of it now is Black Sails, but on the corner, Boston Biddy took over. Another Liz is fighting on, but Boston Biddy just getting the better of another Liz, draws away to win by three quarters. Third Plutonium, fourth at the line.
Four Boston Billy, 9:32.50. One another Liz, 1:50. Six Plutonium, 2:10. Mick Dwyer is our special guest this morning. He joins us now. Good morning to you, Mick.
Good on, mate. How are you?
Very well. Thanks. Congratulations with your win at Rose Hill yesterday.
Yeah, thanks a lot. It was a great win. Fantastic for us.
Well, I can tell you, you had one very excited race caller. I noticed Darren Flindell tipped Kaseki Doan on top, so he wasn't put off by the 30-1.
No, I just listened to his call this morning, and right at the end, I think he thought he was off the air, and he just went, "You beauty."
Yeah, I know.
Mick, a tremendous rule for yourself yesterday, just reading some information that came through yesterday and again this morning. A fantastic win in town. You've had one before in Dubai Dusk, who will be at Warwick Farm on Wednesday, but second winner in town. It was a really tough effort, showed plenty of grit in blousing the hot favourite It's About You in the shadows of the post for Kaseki Dane.
Yeah, that was his third win in a row. I think he's had about 17 starts now. We won with him after about three or four runs, but he was hanging. And he was getting worse and worse and worse. And my young bloke, Craig, he's a jockey, he's won on him his last two starts, but he done all the early work to get him out of those bad habits that he had. And now that he's had a bit of a mind change and he's starting to knuckle down and think about what he's doing, he's really producing the goods. It's great.
Was it the nose roll that went on a few starts ago that did the trick?
The nose roll and the tongue tie.
Okay.
I think it just made him concentrate on what he was doing, you know, rather than, you know, trying to get away from other horses. And well, he got barred, and we had to take him back to the trials. And, mate, I tried one-eyed blinkers, or all different things, pacifiers in his work and everything, and trying to find the actual thing, the trigger mechanism which sinks into their heads. Mate, you just got to keep going and going until you find something that works.
And Mick, just about Kaseki Dane, didn't have the easiest run as well in the race. Travelled wide around the turn, and while you're watching It's About You, the hot pot just received the saloon pass. He's about 4 metres off the rail.
He did, and he just slipped through right at the finish there, and we were alongside each other just as we were coming round the corner. So, and we were about five or six wide, really. And I think he was over racing just a little bit there. He just wanted to get going a little bit early, The young fellow that was on him just lifted him out wider a little bit, and that's how we sort of ended up. So we covered a bit more ground than the favourite, yeah.
And being a 1,900-metre race yesterday, Mick, it gives the impression you could probably step him up to 2,000 and beyond.
In a fortnight. There's a nice benchmark 70 coming up.
Okay, you've already got it penciled in.
Yeah.
You pay tribute, Mick, to obviously yourself being the trainer, but talking about Kobe Jennings as well, and it was your son Craig's idea that just had to get a little bit weight off him yesterday, and Kobe, with the 3 kilo as the claiming apprentice, he managed to get the job done, and it paid in the end.
Yeah, he said, "Dad, I'd love to ride it for you." And he said, "But we've got to be fair on the horse." And I said, "Who do you reckon we?" He said, "Look," he said, "no apprentice is riding better than Kobe Jennings." He said, "Especially with a 3 kilo claim." I said, "Okay, we'll go that way then." I mean, he's been in the racing game for 20-odd years. He started his time with Rod Craig, Warwick Farm, mate, road work with Johnny Duggan for months and months and months, and really knows what he's doing with him, you know, and he's been the secret to him and putting the polish on him.
Tremendous thrill for yourself yesterday. Now, we talked about the other Sydney win that you've had in your career in Dubai Dusk and set down to run at Warwick Farm on Wednesday. You're in form at the moment. Can you let the punters know how Dubai Dusk is faring?
Yeah, well, he didn't hit the lines the other week, and I might have to duck that Warwick Farm run. But we got him to win first up at... he won the Cessnock Cup prelude. And then he just got beaten at Newcastle, and then, mate, we might have went a bit quick with him for the next one. So we might have to just back off him a little bit and see what happens, mate. They're a day-to-day proposition, and that's all you can do. Do your best with them.
Now, just before we...